Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
The attack of Atamanik continues.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, we didn't get to any of our usual questions in either of our shows with Anthony Atamanik, so we're making it a trilogy.
Perfect.
It's Thursday. Yeah, it's Thursday, March 2nd, but this ep will not be out until March 10th, 2023. We had to bank an episode because, well, now that you're listening to it, I can tell you that I was on a cruise. Or I am on a cruise while you're listening to this.
Whoa.
Yeah. Mind blown. And one other thing. Let's go to work. Hello, Anthony Atamanik.
Hello.
Welcome back. Your dreams are your ticket out.
I know, man. This really is like some Sisyphusian stuff happening right now.
This is like if that guy, what's the documentarian that makes all the PBS, Ken Burns?
Yes.
This is like if Ken Burns did a podcast about Anthony Atamanik, it would be way more parts than necessary.
And but, it would be as popular as Ken Burns' Shakers documentary.
What was that?
He did a like 4-part documentary on the Shakers, which were the religious group that, you know, unfucked themselves out of existence.
Is that like the shortest amount of parts he's ever done? Because isn't it like the baseball and the jazz ones like 50 parts each or something?
Yeah, I think this was like early Ken Burns, but, you know, that was the big thing, like in New England furniture, you got, you know, a shaker, like a shaker chair or a shaker bookshelf or whatever, and it's because these people didn't have sex and they just built furniture, and then eventually they died off.
Did they live in Shaker Heights?
Yeah, of course they did. The Battle Four.
That was the name of that. That was a Project Runway, not Project Runway. Project Greenlight.
I wish it was a Project Runway. Greenlight. Excuse me, but where's Shaker Heights?
I meant the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon barely show up show.
That
Project
was the one that
Greenlight.
That was what introduced Shia the Beef. That was like the big.
He was already
thing, right?
He was a. Actor, he was a teen actor already. He had been on Stevens and won daytime Emmys and stuff. Like he wasn't like a neophyte or anything, but he's definitely, you know, brought up in kind of a weirdo hippie showbiz family, and apparently had a fairly abusive father. But that's no excuse.
It's no excuse for being the Beef.
I mean, a crazier person you probably never meet, but what a terrific actor when he gets his shit together.
This is true.
You know, I love that Peter Butter Falcon's one of my favorite movies.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of those a lot of those people, a lot of the great actors are batshit. So,
You're right. Yeah, it's true. They're really not shy about displaying their feelings. And, behaving in weird ways, like just his method stuff that he's done over the years, like when he did that tank movie Fury and he like removed an entire tooth. It's like you don't have to disfigure yourself. Like I didn't like that movie better because he took a tooth out.
Well, that's the famous interview with what's his name and Dustin Hoffman.
Goldman.
Sir Laurence Olivier. And he's like, why don't you just, he's just act, boy. Just act.
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing?
No, that was, William Goldman book about screenplay writing just is so juicy because it just goes on and on about Dustin Hoffman not wanting his character to have a flashlight in the nightstand next to him in bed, because that, you know, that implies the character is some sort of scaredy cat who needs a flashlight. But, you know, they need it in the scene. So, but they still have to stand around arguing about it. I mean, a lot of Tootsie comes from, I think, you know, Dustin Hoffman's crazy method approach and, you know, making fun of himself. Let's get these questions going that we ask everybody except for you.
Yeah, this is why I'm exercising brevity. Yeah.
You got through two episodes without answering any of our questions, which to me means you must be really good at, like, if you're like being interrogated or like if you're lying to try to like get into another country or something. I bet you're really good at like just changing the subject and, you know, talking your way in.
I've escaped a cocaine possession charge at the border of Italy and Switzerland, 1995. That way,
see, I knew you had it in you. You seem like the type.
But that's it. I'm not going to expound on the story. I want to know these questions.
Yeah, we're keeping it streamlined. And the first question, we already got a little bit of field because it's really irrelevant, but I've become fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And that is, how many tattoos do you have?
I have zero tattoos.
What?
Yeah, I have none.
What kind of creative soul like yours goes tattoo-less?
It's funny, my dad has like four. I just never, you know, every time I would start to think about what a tattoo I would get, I'd be mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I don't know. Do I really want that on me for, you know, the rest of my life? And I go, no, I don't want that. So I've gotten up to the point of thinking about it. I've always wanted to have a 137. That's the big, I wanted to have a 137 somewhere on me. And, but it's not out of any conviction, mostly out of, I would say, laziness. Maybe a fear of pain.
Right. So something like you thought of something that's fairly simple. Like it doesn't have to be multiple colors or very big. Just 137.
Just 137. Just a small 137 somewhere on my body. Who knows?
Which is the police code for murder?
No, it's the fine structure constant. It's the most mysterious number in all of physics.
Really?
Oh yes. My God.
1/137. Yeah.
Wow. It's
Wolfgang Pauli, the famous physicist who did therapy with Carl Jung for 10 years. And that was what blew Jung's mind open to create his theory of collective unconscious and synchronicity and so on. And they both informed each other because Wolfgang Pauli is sort of the father of quantum mechanics. He was the person who came up with the fine structure constant, which allows for most of the theoretical physics, quantum mechanics that we do today. And he famously was afraid of the number 137. And he was in a hospital and they wanted to put him in room 137. And he started freaking out and saying, I'll die, I'll die. And he died. He died the next day.
Whoa.
They put him in that room.
Sorry, I was only laughing as you started to unfold that because I was like, there's no way we get through the question.
No, that's it. That's the short answer. Meanwhile, I have to do a set tonight. And I was like, how am I going to fill 5 minutes? How about that? How crazy is that?
Yeah, that's all you gotta think. Do is ask somebody in the audience what they do for a living. I bet you'd go off right there. Yeah. You know, it feels like, you know, and it's not, I'm saying it like it's a bad thing, but it feels like you could talk on any subject.
Yeah, know? I'm a bullshit artist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And the fact that we got such a long answer out of the fact that you have zero tattoos. There is no tattoos to talk about, and we still talked about it for a while.
Hey, he's coming impressive. To Austin.
It's impressive.
Yeah,
I'll get a tattoo with you in Austin.
Yeah. Let's what number would you get, Doug?
Oh, 69.
If you're both sure getting numbers, you're going to get 69, really?
No. I mean, what disgust.
What disgust.
I feel like Doug, you like your whole kind of approach to tattoos is picking something that's like borderline random, like that you might be embarrassed by. Like you almost do that to yourself on purpose.
Yeah, it's all goofy, dumb, kind of in the moment tattoos for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the
so yeah, the best. Anthony was like, all right, let's do it. I'd be like, all right, I guess I'm getting a 69 and I would do it. Yeah, that's fine. It's right. Just permanent.
Yeah. let's make a plan.
Anthony, have you ever seen the movie Room 237?
Of course I have. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you make of all of that? Did you feel like it was too much?
It was too well. It's yes. It's one of those things where you go to buy mushrooms from the guy who sells you mushrooms in college, and it's a fun conversation for the first 15 minutes.
Right.
And then an hour and a half in, you're like, I really want to leave and do these fucking shrooms. And you clearly have done yours. I just think that like there was a couple interesting ones, but I think people found it more profound and I found it more lazy personally, because I think there's a lot of things to think about with Kubrick, especially Eyes Wide Shut. What happened to that missing 20 minutes? Sort of the world he shows in Eyes Wide Shut and the sort of the Epstein world that unveils. I feel there's a lot of other Kubricky conspiracy stuff that's more interesting than some of the things that they discussed in the film. That's what I would say. But it wasn't terrible, but it was okay.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's really it has to be feature length film. So they just go to these, you know, Room 237 societies where people sit around and just go off about these things. Yeah. And some of it just gets so deep. I mean, you know, obviously The Shining is, you know, there's definitely some stuff in there that, you know, maybe nobody will ever understand. But also to try to make something out of every little, you know, every little poster on the wall in the background, you know, like, like, why is there a poster for skiing when the entire place shuts down for ski season anyway?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know. It's like, well,
because it's either there because he's fucking around, or it's there because people didn't think.
Yes. And also, you know? Remember, people who know semiotics, they also purposely put things in there to fuck with people. Like Kubrick knew semiotics. He understood symbols. And so he was purposely, I think, seeding his films sometimes with stuff, you know, imagery, because also that's the whole point of semiotics. It reaches a point of human understanding that's deeper than our conscious understanding. And that's where we assign value to these things. And so people who can manipulate symbols in ways that trigger that part of a person, evoke an emotional response without having to convey it through the traditional means. So, you know, I don't know. The Calumet thing was my favorite, because Calumet's just a regional baking powder. And so people got all like wowed about the Calumet, you know, Indian on the thing. And I get that, you know, maybe there's a reference to this massacre, but I think it's also just regional misunderstanding, you know?
Yeah.
It's like Arrowhead waters in the West Coast and Poland Springs in the East. And so, yeah, of course, Arrowhead looks mysterious to someone who's never fucking seen it, I guess.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. No, it goes on and on. And then did you watch the have you ever seen a screening of The Shining where they play it backwards and forwards at the same time?
No.
And they overlap it over. They basically have two images, the movie playing from the back to the front and the movie playing front to the back. Over each other, and you watch the whole, you know, and the set is kind of a weird sound design where it's, you know, a little of both, but, you know, especially if you've seen the movie before, you always pretty much know what's going on.
Sure.
But there's just these weird, you know, moments that happen when it's synced up like that, that just, like, you know, people think are amazing. And I just thought it was, oh, that's just, you know, that's just what's going to happen when you're watching the movie forwards and backwards over itself.
Yes.
Is that there's going to be some interesting, you know, it's just like the whole thing about, you know, what music you should play, like Dark Side of the Moon, you should play it while watching Wizard of Oz or some shit. Yes. And it's like, yeah, some things will sync up because that's how music works. Like sometimes the beat is going to hit a moment where they cut from one thing to another.
Well,
you know?
Everything.
It also syncs up to Passenger 57.
It's up to anything because everything is measured on the human heartbeat. Like every, I mean, this is my father's a drummer and he would always say that. I go, yeah, you know, this really, but you have a parent who's a musician and be like, oh, this is so weird how this syncs up. And he's like, yeah, it all syncs up. It's your heartbeat. Every beat is ultimately based on the human heartbeat. And I was like, oh, okay.
Thanks, sorry, Dad. Dude.
Thanks.
Like, oh, fuck God, you, Dad.
Oh my God. I'm glad we're not talking to him today.
Oh, you want to see someone who'd make your, you'd have a seven parter with my dad. You think I'm like a weakened version of my father. My father can talk.
Is his name Phil or Buster?
No, Larry. But that's very funny.
Please refresh my memory, Anthony. Yes. In the previous episodes where we talked to you, did you reveal to us your middle name?
I didn't, but I just did, which is Lawrence.
Okay. L-A-W?
Yes.
Bringing down the law, Ritz.
Allah, A-L-A.
Yeah. How do you like that, Lawrence, as a middle name? I mean, do middle names even matter?
I think that I used to think, I guess it sort of sounds like Anthony Lawrence Atamanik sounds very, I guess, I don't know. I guess it sounds sort of formal. I thought at some point of getting rid of my last name based on what we've heard in past episodes. So I thought maybe I'd just call myself Tony Lawrence and that would be my name. But that sounds like a fake name or a lounge name. Like that sounds like a lounge singer.
Or just a British person with a scarf.
Yeah, or Tony Larry. It's Tony Larry. The worst name in the world.
Is it anybody whose last name is Larry? What a weird last name.
Hi, my name's Tony Larry. Nice to meet you. What? Excuse me? But yeah, Lawrence. I haven't really thought. I will say that I know last names aren't that important because you know how when you fill things out online or whatever and it gives you the option to put your middle name? I never do it. I'm always like, no way.
Yeah.
I'm not wasting that extra character typing time.
Yeah. Well, whoever sees your work there is like probably thinks this is a man of mystery.
Exactly.
This is not since Harry S. Truman have I been so intrigued.
Another great card player.
He was?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like what kind of cards?
He used to play Hold'em. He used to play 7-card Uno. Stud, 5-card stud. And he used to go visit the naval ships and play cards with the officers.
Oh, so they probably played war.
They played war, yeah. Yeah.
Like the hours I spent playing war, I cannot get over. I feel like most of the appeal was with other kids. I feel like most of the appeal was just that it was called war. You know, like it was like, hey, let's play war. You know, it just sounds like you're gonna put on helmets and shoot at each other.
Yeah.
And so that sounds fun. And then it's just whose card is higher.
No, I played it with my grandmother.
And over again. Oh, yeah, that is a good grandparent game. I played more complicated card games with my grandparents for some reason. We got into like rummy, like Liverpool rummy.
Oh, yeah. Or cribbage. Used to love cribbage.
I never cribbaged.
Cribbage is you get into it. Once you get into it, you're like, oh shit, I get why people are into cribbage.
Yeah, they're all so weird though. Like my grandfather was really into Othello because he was good enough at it that he, win most of the time. So it was always fun to, do hold that over me or whatever.
Yeah.
But I there's so many of those games that it just feels like there's just a certain thing you need to learn, and then you're gonna only be as good at it as the person you're playing is bad at it.
Yes, yeah, I mean that's most games,
right? That's true. That's a good point. That is a good point. But I don't know. It just feels like looking back on those, they feel like they were time wasters, as opposed to Monopoly. Sort of makes you have to deal with all sorts of different, skill set sort of things.
Or Clue. I like Clue because of the having to reduce down the information.
Right, but you never got the kinds of clues that characters get like in actual movies and stuff.
No.
It was more just having to be like, well, it's not this person. It couldn't be that person because they were over there, and it's just kind of narrowing it down based on the details that
Well, then there's like fucking the game Sorry. Presents. Sorry, which sucked. Sorry was like shit. Sorry was always in a like a, you know, a rec room or something, you know?
Yeah. And just a lot of like people love to yell sorry. Like they really love to rub it in when you, you know. So many of the games, like these days, I don't even know if there's games out there that you see the commercial so much that you're into yelling out the thing they yell in the commercial. I don't know if that happens anymore.
No, I don't think those games even, like, I don't even think there's a market for that. Like they exist.
I don't know. Like, do they still have Pop-O-Matic games? Like, can you still, you know, get a Trouble in Pop-O-Matic?
Oh,
The surgery one, Trouble, I think, is still exists Pop-O-Matic. And I think what's the one, the surgery one?
Operation.
Operation. Yeah.
I've seen an ad for Operation, like a recent than I would think.
We definitely
that game you lose the little rubber band that's supposed to be the which thing is it supposed to be, like some part of your body's got a little rubber band in there.
It's like the kidney or the spleen.
No. What were you gonna say, Doug?
Oh, during lockdown we definitely got some board games. So they're all out there still.
Which all of those that we just mentioned?
We definitely got Operation and, oh God, what's the one where
you
all
you went to the store and bought
up?
Board games during the crisis of our lives?
Yeah, we wore masks at the store.
And sure.
But
you really went out for the essentials.
Well, then, you know, like
really
when
board
when
games.
You were deep into it and we were all, you know.
Yeah, board. I mean, their
fun.
Perfect board game has never been named more aptly than during the pandemic.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
We're bored.
There's a great game called Five Crowns. There's a card game called Five Crowns. That's fun. Karma. That's a fun one. Karma's a fun card game. My aunt and uncle love like different like themed card games. Like they're like these weird, totally new rules, totally different decks of cards.
So yeah, that's fun when the cards are different. I don't like it when I just acquired recently a New York City Skyline chess set. And once they start moving around the table, I don't know which one's supposed to be a horsey and which one's supposed to be a castle because they're all buildings.
Yeah, that's too much. Yeah, they're all buildings. Too much. That would be too much rewiring there to do.
Yeah, it's fun to look at initially, but then playing it's weird.
Although I would have to cover that I'm terrible at chess to begin with, so I'd just be like, I don't know.
Yeah,
even if they were the normal pieces, what the
worse.
Fuck's happening?
Yeah,
exactly. All right, I'm pulling off the diversion bandwagon.
So the flow of your name and your initials, we all agree that works. Nothing to worry about there.
Godlike, yeah.
ALA sounds like some sort of nonprofit organization that does good things.
Yes.
I always donate
my company
to ALA.
Yeah, that's what I should start telling people if they're like, you don't do shit. You talk a big game politics wise, but you don't do shit. I'd be like, I donate to ALA.
Yeah, I'm the biggest supporter of ALA, and you can look that up if you want.
The American Liberation Alliance.
Oh, okay. So out there trying to do is liberate Americans.
Yeah, I'm trying to liberate Americans from
the tyranny
thoughts.
Day to day life.
Day to day. You know, I mean, I've become a hard sort of weird, you know, right winger libertarian since the pandemic. You know, it's been sort of a big change for me. I'm really aggressive. I'm really big into alpha male stuff, all that good stuff.
ALA is short for alpha.
Alpha lame alpha.
What about? Let's do the history of your nicknames. We may have touched upon these earlier in the earlier episodes, but as a child, everyone just called you
Ant-Man? Was the big one.
Ant-Man, that's right.
Ant-Man.
So it was Ant-Man, Twan, because I was in French class and it was Antoine, but then people would call me Twan. Hey, Twan.
Right.
So there was Tuan, Ant-Man, and then the weirdest one, which still I have friends who I don't see particularly often, but they'll call me the name Honey, H-O-N-Y.
Right. Now this is ringing some bells.
Okay. So I got a letter from a women's, this was in high school, and I got like a letter from like a women's like scholarship fund that was like, you should apply, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why? I opened the letter first and was like, what is this? And then realized that they had removed the T and it was Ann Honey. And they thought my name was Ann Honey. And but Ann with one N, which is, I don't know of anyone who spells their name Ann with one N. So I told a few friends in school, I brought the letter. And of course I thought it was just so brilliant at the time. I was like, isn't this fucking so funny? And then people would call me Anhoney, and then it's shortened to Honey, which is probably the weirdest. Stony, I got a lot playing cards. So Stony, Tuan, Ant-Man, Honey, those are the nicknames, basically.
Stony playing cards because you're like holding up the game a lot.
No, you'd think it was because I was high. It was because I was stone faced. It was because no one could read me.
All right, Stony. Do you like you don't like wear the sunglasses when you're playing poker, do you?
No, I don't give a shit about any of that.
Yeah. I like wearing sunglasses all the time. So like the fact that you can sit there and have them on while you're playing poker with a bunch of strangers, I just love that because I love not having to make eye contact with anybody. And also, you know, poker rooms are so bright for the most part, you know, so I like bringing my own shade and putting it right on my eyes.
Well, you know, you're in California, so you're wearing sunglasses more often. Although I will say I am also a bit of a Roy Orbison. I basically wear sunglasses whenever I'm outside. Because I read an article about ocular cancer like 10 years ago. And I was like, well, I better wear sunglasses for the rest of my fucking life. But when I go in the casino, usually it's at night, so I don't bring them with me. And I'm you know, in New England where I'm not wearing if I'm going to the Encore or whatever. So no, I don't. But I don't like put the hood up or any of that stuff. I was actually playing cards with some friends last night, and I told them I got this shit look from people. And I realized now, and I knew I was doing it at the time, but there was like a core group of us who'd been playing for about 5 hours at a cash table. And we were all pretty friendly. And this guy next to me was a younger guy, and he had a very clear tell, like a very clear tell. And this group of sort of asshole-y people came to the table who were just a little too serious about game theory and stuff. And it's a $1-3 table. It's not like it's like, you know, you're making a lot of money. So I was getting kind of tired of these assholes. And so this guy was in the hand with the guy and he called him off. And so I turned to him and I said, you know, you have a tell. And everyone got so pissed at the table. And I went, your tell is, I said, you put your hand over your neck on your right side. And I think it's because you're covering your artery, which is like pulsing like a mad person. I said, so I would either pull your collar up or I would just keep your hand on your neck because you're showing everyone when you have a hand, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
And
getting excited.
Mad at dog me. People were so mad at me at the table, but I was like, fuck you guys.
That's not how you should be getting money out of somebody, is by figuring out something, you know, so obvious like that and taking advantage of it. Unless the guy's being a jerk, you know, if he's sitting there, you know, spouting a lot of trash, then that's always fun. But yeah, generally, when somebody's got that obvious of a thing going on, it just seems like it's unfair.
Help them out. You know, you never know. Someone might show you some kindness at the table when you need it. So,
Exactly. Look at
it. But okay, I'm not. Okay, I'm going to stop again.
Well, perfect, because we need to take a break. We need to go to a quick round of commercial advertisements for things that people need and desire, and we'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back. We're making good time. We really are. We're almost on schedule. So did we say what nicknames you have now currently, or is there anybody in your life that calls you by a nickname?
Let me see. Is there anyone? I mean, besides my wife's like pet names.
Yeah, I don't know if we need to get into that kind of thing.
Well, no, I mean, that would be the only nickname, I guess. I'm trying to just think real quick. No, not really. Tony. I mean, Tony's the closest to a nickname now that I would say I have. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, have you ever tried to get a nickname going for yourself that just wouldn't stick?
That is such a good question. Cause I know that I have, but I would be at a loss to try to think of what they were, probably because they're so humiliating to even consider that I tried to get a nickname going.
Call me Ace. I do think,
you know, I think that I did want to be called Double A. I remember, and I will say there was one person, which means like what I think is now, I think is like, that's really flat chested.
No, it sounds like you have extra big little tits.
That's right. Extra big little tits.
But they're double A's. Come on.
Extra big little tits really does sound like a fable.
They're playing at South by Southwest this year.
Yeah, exactly. But so yes, I remember one person called me Double A once, and I was like, ooh, that's a good one. And then I would try, because it sounded, I think it was a person who, you know, to me, they were like from the street, and I was like, oh yeah, like I want like a fucking hardcore name. Oh, I did have Tony. I'm sorry, I had Tony Bag of Donuts. That was one.
Yeah. Okay.
I did have Tony Bag of Donuts from the days when I worked for this mob restaurant. And I used to bring money in a donut bag downtown.
Wow. So they really, that's very specific.
It was a Dunkin' Donuts bag. And it was like the same dirty wax bag. And they go, and I remember Pete went, he goes, Big Pete went, hey, this guy's Tony Bag of Donuts. You know, and little Pete, his son, was like, yeah, dad, that's right. Tony Bag of Donuts. And then everybody would say it, his children, and they would all call me Tony Bag of Donuts all the time. So there you go. I forgot about that.
It's so fun when people get so tickled by saying a thing that there's nothing, you know, clever about just repeating it over and over again, but they feel like they're really scoring.
No, and I also think it's like, that's not even like a creative. I think that's like an already used nickname from like a movie or something.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not even original.
No, it's already like a mobster reference. It's already from one of the movies.
Yeah.
They already say that.
Well, mobby people tend to do that. Mobby people tend, like real mobby people tend to actually, it's a weird snake feeding its own tail.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
No, that's their world, but it's also not that, you know, it's like they, you know, watching that thing about the making of The Godfather was amazing, how the mafia like doesn't want people to, you know, think badly of them.
No.
But they also want you know, attention. You know what I mean? They don't want to just quietly go about their business. They want to be flashy, but also respected and not to, it's wild.
That's the Italian conundrum, really.
Yeah, it's just so funny how like the mafia came to the, you know, the producer of the movie and was like, you know, we don't want you talking about the mafia in a movie. He goes, what if we don't say the word mafia? And they're like, okay, like that was all it took.
Yeah,
was just, yeah. So then they just say other shit, Cosa Nostra or whatever. Yeah. And a total workaround. It's still clearly the fucking mafia in the story. Yeah. And
I don't think we ever said it.
They're okay with it.
I don't think we ever said it at work, but I do remember, I think I said this before, but there was a guy named the Bishop. And that was always like, he's like, this guy's the Bishop. And you're just like, okay. And the whole thing was, he looked like a chess piece. Speaking of your New York chess piece, he looked like a bishop off of a chessboard because he was shaped like one. He was sure shaped like Danny DeVito's the Penguin, basically.
Oh, okay.
And And he was, you know, he was a weird guy. But listen, I got to say, you know, I don't know. That's always a strange relationship. I mean, they helped me out with some neighbors who were real problems and got them to get out of the neighborhood.
So oh, God.
I'm fine with them.
Well, here's the most important question we ask on the show, and that is for you to tell us with as much detail as you'd like about the Dougs the Dougs that you've known in your life.
The closest Dougs to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's come into mind. Other present company excluded. What Dougs do you know?
Well, the first Doug that comes to mind actually is a guy named Doug Gray, who was my roommate in college. And he was like, he had a face like a fucking baseball mitt. Like he had like a very like crunched up face. I don't know how else to describe him. He had very crunched up, almost like he had like a dust bowl or like a depression era face. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a writer and he was like a true like writer guy. Like he was like a Kerouac-y kind of guy, you know, big drinker, but like could hold his liquor. He was one of those people you were never scared about how drunk he was. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. He just would just get sort of more pickled and he'd write and maybe he'd get a little more jolly. And he was there for a lot of my prank, like my college prank phone calls. I had a friend who now is like a producer, you know, like daytime producer. At the time, though, he somehow had numbers. I remember I pranked Soleil Moonfry and I pranked what's his name? Corinthian Leather.
Ricardo Montalban.
Ricardo Montalban, right after his spinal surgery. And I'll never forget, he said to me, I called him as Shatner, and after him suffering this bullshit for like 5 minutes, he went, I have had severe spinal surgery and wish to get off the phone.
This conversation is hurting my spine.
I'll never forget. He went, I am having severe spinal surgery. And I was like, wow, what an excuse. But Doug was great. And then he moved to London to go write for a paper. And we lost touch for a bit. But then he moved back to Boston and he would reach out to me from time to time. And he was one of the few people who I was like fond of from my college time. And he actually, just before the pandemic, on March 1st of 2020, I saw him for the first time in probably 25 years or 23 years. He came and saw the last show that James and I did, which was in Boston. And so that's Doug Gray, Dougie, as I called him. Call him Dougie Gray. Doug Mand. Do you know Doug Mand?
He's been brought up before. He wrote Doug Mand. Oh crap! He wrote a great movie. I can't think of the name.
Yeah, didn't he write the movie, the one where the guy goes back to school, like most likely to kill, most likely to murder?
Oh yeah, most likely to murder. It's fantastic.
Adam Pally's in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Doug did a podcast called Duty Calls, and by the way, I am a multi-parter. I have so many shit stories that they ended up having to do two. I shit my pants so many fucking times that they had to have two fucking episodes. God damn it. What's wrong with me? I have no self-awareness.
Oh, no, you're fuck. A good guest. You fill the time.
So Doug, you make it Doug happen. Mand. So I know Doug Mand. I mean, I we're acquaintances and kind of friends. I mean, I don't want to insult. I don't think he'd be insulted by that. We're it's not like we're super close.
If I were Doug Mand, I would go Douglas.
Douglas Mand. Douglas Mand. Yeah, absolutely.
Because Doug Mand just sounds like a superhero, a bad superhero.
Sounds like Tony Larry. It's a little too Tony Larry.
That's Douglas a little Mand. Too Tony Larry. I remember when SNL first started, it was people were like, hey, Lauren Michaels, why do all the people that not ready for primetime players, why do they refer to themselves as their own names? Like, why aren't they playing characters? And he said, well, because I don't believe in that style of comedy with the funny names. And then his example that I remember was him saying Walter J. Crankcase.
Walter J. Crankcase?
Yeah, like as an example of we don't write that kind of humor. It's like, well, who does? I mean,
what the fuck is that? That's the Canadian in him. That's the Canadian
yeah,
in,
yeah,
in
him. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I used to go to the 30 Rock. I was an extra in 30 Rock for 7 fucking years. And, but we'd have the parties, you know, the rap parties and everything. And Lauren always be there, right? And I would make it my bit, a committed bit that I did for 7 seasons, where I would go over, I would look at everybody. And I mean, you know, we were, you know, it was, you're on a show for that long, and we were sort of recurring extras. We were called FOTs, Friends of Tina. So we're sort of like a little folded into the cast. And so I would like, you know, look at Judah or whoever and be like, I'm going to go over and do it. And I would sit down, you know, and Lauren be sitting there, and I would sit at the table and I would just talk to him about Canada and like local places in Ontario. And he would always be like, yes, you know, okay. And you could just see that he so desperately wanted me to get the fuck out of there. Have I already told this? I feel like I've already told this.
And
Tina one time came over, and she walked over and like hurried over and was like, okay, like get out of here. Like, get out of here. And I always think about when I did the stage audition for SNL, I was like, wow, I really stacked the deck against myself, because he must look and go, that is the annoying man who talks about Canada all the time. And I was like, I'll never get this job for a myriad of reasons. But I was like, that is one of the reasons.
Yeah, he didn't want to have that conversation with you every Saturday.
Oh, God, no. And I would, yeah, I would really bring up like Uxbridge details, you know, young lore, you know, what's it like going down to East Queen? Doug Jones.
Yes, from, the great Star Doug Trek. Jones. Yes.
I love Doug Jones so much, and he is truly one of the nicest people. He's like just you know, people always talk about like people who are really nice, right? And working with or in the industry, right? And then you like meet the person and you're like, wow, they were like horrible. He is truly one of the nicest people you've ever met. And my favorite, here's my three sort of favorite things is one, he's just a kind, he's a good, like hang around person. Like he's a good person shooting the shit in between takes kind of person. I remember the first time I worked with him was on season 1 of Shadows, and he like lifts me up. I encounter the Baron out on the street, and he lifts me up and, you know, chokes me while I'm like getting some beer. And he was in the Baron makeup, and I did like a little prosthetics and stuff as Trump, but like I never really had to do much prosthetic stuff. And I'm staying there listening to him, and just under his breath, he just sort of, I think as like a mantra to himself, be like, God, I can't wait to get out of this. Can't wait to get out of this. Like he would just sort of say it to himself, like, oh, this is itchy. This is uncomfortable. And I was like, that must be because he's done so much work. And I asked him about it. I was like,
like half his life.
Like, yeah, this is like, he's like, yep. He's like, it is. It's, and he's always balances like being like, I'm very grateful and it's like really great and all that. And he's like, but I'm not going to lie that it's not like a pain in the ass, you know? So I like that he was like honest about it, but not, you know, he was like, you know, not like, oh, it's just the most wonderful thing. It's like, obviously it's not. I mean, prosthetics are a pain in the ass and you have to get up really early and all that. And then my other favorite thing is, you know, he's in, you know, Star Trek Discovery, and I'm a huge Trekker. And I hadn't watched Discovery. I think I might have said this already, but I'll just say it again, which is I hadn't watched Discovery. And I think I watched it between the last two seasons. So we just were filming five this fall. And I wrote him and I said, I just want you to know you should be grateful. I did not watch Discovery prior to this season. And he was like, why? And I was like, because I will bother you about Trek questions constantly. And I did it one time and I could just see the like life leave his eyes. I went, all right. I went, forget it, forget it. I was kind of doing it as a bit, you know, like really peppering him with Trek questions. But he was like, please, please stop. yeah, those are the Dougs that come to mind.
Those are some great Dougs. That was a great answer. We always ask the guests how close they are to people with their own name, but you must have had a lot of Tonys in your life.
No, my grandfather. Really? Let's see, my grandfather,
Tony Bennett,
and I've met Tony Bennett on three occasions.
There you go. See, I knew it.
I sang "Fly Me to the Moon" with him in a cafe that I was closing in Boston. Yes. Okay. Okay. You did this. This is your fault. So I used to work at this place called Louis Boston, which was a really like, it was like the Neiman Marcus or Bonwitz Teller of its time. Like it was like a very famous clothing store in Boston on the corner of Beacon and Berkeley. And they had a cafe and I was the cashier. Okay. So I was just like the cashier. And the best part was I was so broke and it was like a really nice, like fancy food, you know, like Michelin food. And what I would do is I would make up a name every week and I had a deal with the valet. And we would split the food and I would do a huge order at the end of like the Friday. And it would be like a made up name. And then probably like Lorne Michaels, whatever that name was that he made up. And then we would put the food out in the valet house. And then we would just eat and drink off of the restaurant's dime all weekend. Right. So that was one nice thing. But so all these famous people came in there and, you know, I met all kinds of people. John Kerry, former Secretary of State and presidential candidate, is a notoriously shitty fucking tipper. Ted Kennedy was a great tipper. But Tony Bennett was in there like all day and whatever. And he had had lunch there and I didn't know, but someone turned a scarf into Lost and Found, right? So I'm cleaning up. It's the end of the night and the cafe closed a few hours before the store did. And he must have been getting custom fittings because that was the whole thing. It was the only place really I think it bought besides New York where you could like get a Xenia suit like custom tailored. And the tailors there had been there for decades or whatever. So he comes into the shop and I'm like, everything's gone. You know, I've emptied all the register and everything and put everything away. And he came in and he goes, excuse me, you know, have you seen my, you know, I left my scarf in here, you know? And I went, oh yeah, yeah. I go, and I was such a cheese ball. And I went, I had, you know, music playing. I said, oh, what if I go, let me put on Fly Me to the Moon. And he goes, nah, we don't need to, I'll just sing it. And he just started going, fly me to the moon in the store. And so I started singing with him. And he like gave like a little thumbs up and he didn't do the whole, it wasn't like he sang the whole thing. He sang like a couple of verses while I got the scarf. And, but it was like, that was like super cool. And then years later, I saw him in a dressing room at SNL and said hello to him and like reminded him of that. And he kind of was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I was on a flight just a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And I think he was going through his stuff and it wasn't public yet that he was sort of starting to decline a bit. But despite how rough it is that he declined, he was declining. We got to the gate at LAX and we were waiting for a long time. We had stood up and they were not bringing the gate out, and he was getting a little ornery. And I had not introduced myself this time because I also was like, what am I going to do? Just keep reintroducing myself to Tony Bennett. And his wife was next to him and we were all in first. So he was right in front of me and his wife was like catty corner to me. And she had looked at me a few times because he had made some like audible yelps and he had burped a few times out loud. And she was like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I was like, yeah, yeah, whatever. You know, I get it. He clearly, you could tell, was, you know, having a little trouble with public behavior, which happens with people who are like on decline. And but it was funny. I mean, this just was funny. We were staying there for a while and he was like, what the hell's going on here? And he just lit the loudest fart. He lit the loudest fart and she went, Tony, like that. And he turned and looked right at me and just like winked. And I was like, do it, man. I was like, go for it. So those are my three Tony Bennett stories. Those are my three crazy Tony Bennett stories.
Farts are dying to get out of you when it's time to get off the plane.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Like when you're walking the gangway, farts are always coming out at that point because they've just been, you know, you've been surrounded by people. So your farts have been shy. And the second they get a chance to, you know, explore the world.
Oh, God bless them. And I say, like, as someone who steered my Italian grandfather through dementia and everything, like, this is not a like, oh, isn't that funny that he was like out of it? It's like, you know, it was a shame that you could see he was out of it, but it was a funny moment and he knew it was funny. Like he laughed.
It was funny.
So,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. I think no matter how bad our brains get, farts are still funny.
I met Tony Danza. Just,
okay. All right. Listen, Anthony, you've been a terrific 3-time guest on the show and you really did it. You really got through, you know, all of the questions.
And then at the end of the third one, he made fun of Alzheimer's and,
So we've really done it all here. You're going to be at South by Southwest. Yes.
I'm going to be at South by Southwest from the, I'll be there the 9th, but I'm performing the 10th through the 14th. I think I'll be on your show.
Yeah, Doug Loves Movies, March 14th at 6 o'clock at Esther's in downtown Austin. And so if you have a badge, or even if you don't, you could probably get in, but definitely get in if you have a festival badge. Do you have anything else you'd like to plug, Tony?
I always like to plug Coffee with Tony, twitch.tv/coffeewithtony. It's Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern, and it's just a fun old fuck around. So if you want to see me scream and fill an hour, 5 hours a week, I do it. So there you go.
Fantastic. We have complete faith in your ability to fill 5 hours in an entertaining way. And if I had time to listen to podcasts, I'd be all over it. Doug, what have you got to plug?
Friday, 3:10. I'll be at Hotel Vegas in Austin, Texas, on Chris Tellez's comedy portion of a show with a bunch of great bands like Octopus Project. That's Friday, 3:10, Hotel Vegas. And then on March 24th, I'll be in New Orleans opening for Dan Comens at the Civic Theater. Come on out.
Wow.
What about
The March 10th is today. If people
are
the day this comes out. Doug Loves Movies is also going to be at South by Southwest on Saturday, March 18th at 4:20 in the afternoon at the club called Creek in the Cave, also downtown, just a stone's throw from Esther's in downtown Austin. All of my dates and deets are at douglovesmovies.com. And thanks again to Anthony Atamanik, and we came up with, or I should say I came up with by myself, the title for this episode that I will say in a moment. Any final words, Tony?
This has been quite a journey, and I appreciate it. It was very interesting. I feel like this will be something maybe, you know, that will be a record that they can play, I guess, at my death or something. They can play it at my...
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. Just have get people together and listen to these three episodes. And
yeah, this feels like the Superman crystal and the you know, it feels like one of the crystals that you slide into the little tube.
Yeah, people can get all of the knowledge that you wanted to share with everybody via this podcast about names.
Yeah. So thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, well thanks, done. Man. Yeah, thanks a lot. As always, Doug and Tony Show Part 3, the final chapter.